Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, Mark Poff here. Chuck and Julie have taken the day off, so I'm filling in for them. And if you heard our little teaser on Friday, you know that just right here in a minute, we're going to be speaking with Sheriff Chuck Jenkins. And he is from the Frederick, Maryland, Frederick County, Maryland Sheriff's Office. And, you know, we kind of had some last minute glitches, so I'm a little bit shell-shocked right now. So just give me a second here and we'll get everything organized. Again, I want to thank Chuck and Julie for letting me guest host on their show while they take a vacation day. And we're going to be talking about something that happened in Maryland. We're also going to be talking about defunding the police and systemic racism and law enforcement. So if you have any questions, I will be monitoring the chat area, but give me a couple seconds to kind of notice that. You can also call in with the call-in number 888-627-6008, and we'll try to bring people on if we have time. But one of the things that I've always talked about whenever I guest host is I've kind of stayed a little bit out of politics, but you know that I am a little bit political. And I talk about law enforcement because I was a detective and a deputy with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for about 17 years. So I'm very familiar with law enforcement. And my buddy John St. Augustine, he's hanging out with us. We might or might not bring him in at some point to ask a question or something. But for the most part, I really want to spend as much time as I can with Sheriff Jenkins, because there's been a lot of interesting things that have happened out there. And I've told you from the past that I feel that this whole defunding police and the continued false narratives of systemic racism in law enforcement is going to get people hurt. And it's going to cause scenarios that are just not safe for law enforcement, and it's not safe for our communities. So I'm going to bring in Sheriff Chuck Jenkins, if you could bring him in, TJ. And we're going to have a conversation. I always get the wrong view here, so I can't ever tell if he's in or not. So Sheriff Jenkins, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I love the screen and everything in the background, having been a deputy for 17 years. I know what it's like to be a deputy. So I think it'd be better if you actually kind of frame, because I've talked in earlier podcasts about systemic racism and this false narrative that, you know, all law enforcement is systemically racist, which I haven't seen in my 17 years. So I'd like for you to kind of just start off there. And then I want to talk about this traffic stop that Sure. Everybody's talking about in Frederick, Maryland.
So, yeah, thank you. So listen, I've been in policing over 30 years, actually 31 years, Frederick County Sheriff's Office. And I do not believe for one minute there is systemic or system-wide racism in policing. It's simply not there. I think we've demonstrated that over the years. You know yourself, Mark, coming into policing, every individual for decades now is undergoing a psychological assessment to make sure you don't hire people that have these biases, these prejudices, these feelings of maybe racist ideology, things like that. So I think we go above and beyond to keep that type of person out of policing. Beyond that, I don't think you can demonstrate there's been a pattern of this behavior in policing. I don't think for one minute that anybody in law enforcement gets in their car in the morning, puts on their gun, and goes out to put hands on or to hurt somebody. I just simply don't believe it. What I think happens over time, and we've seen this over recent years, you have incidents that occur with bad outcomes that may have a racial component or may believe to have a racial component. And we always Monday morning quarterback those, and we always there are certain segments of people who want to throw that race issue, that racism into the outcome. Not necessarily so. It's simply a law enforcement officer trying to effect an arrest for some reason, or trying to confront someone for some reason, and something goes bad. But automatically, when they can, there seems to be this habit of throwing, tying it to racism. I do believe there's a probability that there are some officers over time, based on where the police or what they're exposed to, that may develop a bias or a prejudice. I do believe that's possible. But as far as systemic wide racism in policing, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to accept that narrative anymore. It's simply not true. And if the pushback has to start here nationwide, listen, every chief in this country, every sheriff in this country ought to be standing up beside me and saying it simply doesn't exist. This is a political agenda, a political narrative, and it's going to damage policing. It's going to damage our society.
And it's going to, I think, get people hurt.
It is. It's going to cause, you know, yourself. And I'll say this. I was a detective for 17 years of my career. So what it's going to cause is a deputy or a police officer to hesitate in making a decision. And it's going to cause his or her life and the life of a life of someone in the public. So it's going to be costly. And what you're already seeing in many cases, officers across the country are no longer proactive. That, again, is going to be damaging to the public.
Right. You're going to have a lot of deputies, officers, detectives that aren't going to be proactive into getting involved, because they're going to be start thinking, you know, here I am going to get involved and try to do the right thing.
Yes.
And if it doesn't work out perfectly, I'm going to be called a racist or other things. And now with the way that people, I don't want to say people, but certain political groups are not supporting law enforcement, they don't even know if the agency is going to back them up. If they get into a situation to where, you know, I used to always say, for every one thing that can go right, there's 99 things that can go wrong. Right.
And we both know that 99.999% of events have the right outcome. It's just a very, very small percentage that goes south on us. And again, it's not because of race. It's because of circumstances surrounding that incident, where if you look at 99 out of, or probably 999 out of 1,000 incidents could have been prevented or avoided if the bad guy simply obeyed the lawful order of the police officer. How many times have we seen that? And it's really, really tragic.
Right. And you're absolutely correct. You know, if somebody doesn't resist arrest or cause a problem, there's going to be a good outcome, you know, where people are most likely not going to get hurt. Now, we've all been in situations, and sometimes we kind of, you know it ahead of time. It's like, you know, I don't think this is going to work out. And then there's some bad outcomes, but it's normally not due to law enforcement. They go out of their way. You know, I was a detective for 10 years. And I saw constantly where law enforcement went out of their way to try to defuse a situation that just couldn't be defused.
Exactly.
And the circumstances go bad. I've never seen a compliant, non-resisting person ever get hurt. Now, that's me. You know, there has been some situations where accidents have happened, but we're so quickly now to say that it's based in racism or some kind of bias that it happened, that we're judging people without really looking at the facts.
I agree. And I don't know about you, but I know over my 17 years as a detective, I probably only ever had to put hands on an individual maybe a handful of times at most. So again, go ahead.
Well, I was just getting ready to say, sorry for interrupting. I worked in the jail for about 8-9 months before I went out on the street and then ultimately a detective. And I think in the jail environment, I only laid on hands maybe 2, maybe 3 times, mm-hmm. and out on the street about the same. Now, I've had people pull assault rifles on me, you know, things. So this is what I used to always say. Whenever you go through a traffic stop, you know, and there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop, I used to tell people that who's the person who really needs to be scared about the traffic stop? You know, if you're getting pulled over by law enforcement, if you comply and you obey the lawful orders, you have nothing to worry about. But every time a patrol officer or a patrol deputy goes through a traffic stop, that could be the end of their life.
Right.
And so many times more, it's the law enforcement officer. And here's the thing that always scared me, especially, I have so much, I don't want to say sympathy, but that's not the right word, for state patrol. I don't know if they're state troopers in Maryland or state patrol.
Right.
They're out there on the interstate. And I have to tell you, even in the time when that guy pulled an assault rifle on me, I think I was at the most scared on a traffic stop on the interstate. And I used to stay off of the interstate because I was scared to death well, not to death, but you know what I mean. Yeah. Cars going by at 70, 75 miles an hour, a lot of cops get killed by getting hit by cars doing traffic stops.
They do. It's pretty unnerving out there. It's really a pretty dangerous situation. And again, unnerving to the officer, to the deputy, to the trooper who are out there, like you said, most times by themselves, not knowing what they can even expect to encounter. So
right,
especially I got a little saying about this. You know, yeah. We don't need police reform. We need societal reform toward policing. Exactly
right. If people understood better, and I definitely have learned this over my years being in law enforcement, I'm sure you would agree, it's that our citizens don't understand how to interact with law enforcement. You know, and I constantly tell young people, I used to go to the high schools and talk to kids, you know, hey, if you get pulled over, relax. It's not a big, well, it may be a big deal, but it's probably your fault. But you need to pull over to the right. If it's nighttime, turn on your inside light inside the dome. Right. So the officer can see inside your vehicle, you know, and make it safe. Pull way off to the right. I hated, it used to bother me when people wouldn't even pull all the way off the roadway because I don't want anybody to get hurt. So because of this, and here's the real problem, because of the false narrative that's being spread across this country, they're making individuals and mainly minorities to question if it's a routine traffic stop. I hate to use that word. If it's a traffic stop, do they have to be worried? And the bottom line is, if you comply and you don't have anything to worry about.
I was going to say make that exact same point. You're absolutely right. I mean, this false narrative is continually put out there and people continue to hear this. They really don't know. They don't understand. They don't know. And again, it has a propensity to make them believe I'm stopped for something other than a valid a traffic stop.
Right. And then there's some bias there. And I know during my 17 years, and you've been in law enforcement a lot longer, I have yet to ever see anybody get pulled over for a racially motivated reason. In fact, the one story that I gave was back when I was an FTO, long time ago, riding with another deputy. He says, hey, that guy's front plate is hanging down. It's only hanging on by one screw. So he turned the car around and he pulled the guy over just because his plate, he just wanted to tell the guy that his plate was hanging down. And then we got dispatched to a call right at that second. It happens, you know, Murphy's Law. It happens all the time. So the one deputy who was driving the car was my FTO, my trainer. He said, just go up there and tell the guy, hey, we just wanted to let you know that the license plate was hanging down. And then we'll be on our way. So I walked up there, and as soon as the window went down, the guy said, look, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I think you pulled me over because I was black. And I looked at him and I said, well, actually, I didn't pull you over. My partner made the decision to pull you over. And oh, by the way, he happens to be black. And all we wanted to tell you was that your license plate looked like it was about to fall off. There's no citation. Right. We were just doing this as a courtesy to let you know.
Yeah, I had a very similar incident myself the other week here, a few months ago. So, you know, we're always trying to enforce the no handheld devices while they're driving. So I travel with my windows open all the time, and I pull up to a traffic light, a black gentleman in the car next to me, hands on device, texting while he's sitting there at the light. And I said, sir, I said, I'm Sheriff Jenkins. Could I ask you to please put your device down? It's against the law to operate a motor vehicle with a device. You're just telling me that because I'm black. I said, no, sir, I'm telling you that so I don't have to pull you over and give you a $75 payable fine for texting while driving. So, but that's the kind of resistance we meet. And I was doing nothing more than being courteous, trying to remind him to avoid a citation.
Right. And because of the narrative going on now over, you know, from the last year, there's going to be all these questions, you know, when somebody gets pulled over, why am I being pulled over? It's most likely because you're speeding or there's some type of infraction that's there has to be something.
There has to be probable cause for a violation for every single traffic stop. And every traffic stop is issued a piece of paper, either a warning, an equipment repair order, or a citation. So
right.
That we can track that.
And here in Colorado, and this was actually when I was in uniform or working at the sheriff's office, if we did not give you a ticket, we had to give you a business card, you know, so we didn't have to fill out a warning slip,
right?
But we'd give them a business card so they knew exactly who pulled them over and we would tell them why. You know, right. This is why I pulled you over.
That used to be the case here years ago, but we found it, again, a protection for the officer to write that warning, the repair order, or a citation. It just covers CYA a little bit more.
Right, exactly. So because of this false narrative that's going along, and there's actually other things we could talk about, but I want to kind of just stick to the law enforcement side of this. When it comes to this whole narrative of systemic racism, which I've never seen. So something happened in your county, and I want everyone to know about your county. This is so interesting. You know, I did a little research, and I find it so interesting that your county is less than a mile, or less than a mile, less than an hour's drive from Washington, D.C. It also, in Maryland, borders Pennsylvania to the north. You also border West Virginia to the west and Virginia to the south.
Correct.
Is that right?
It's a very unique county, very much so. Population about 270,000 people, still largely rural county, a lot of country, a lot of farms. But yeah, very, very great. I call it the land of pleasant living up here.
Right. And I actually just got back from Kentucky. I'm actually a native of Kentucky. And moved out to Colorado to visit family. And it looks like, I actually kind of looked at some pictures and stuff. It looks very similar to Kentucky. Very beautiful, very green, which we're very envious of out here in Colorado because things aren't quite so green. And you have I-70, if I saw it right, running right through your town.
We've got I-70, I-270, which runs main artery in and out of Washington, D.C., it ties in pretty close by with the I-95 corridor. So we are really at an area where major interstates converge, yet we still keep that rural flavor here.
Right. And so it seems like, and you tell me, because you live there, obviously, and you have your entire life, it's just a unique environment. And have you seen it change over the years because of your proximity to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Right now, we're still currently right now. We're in the midst of a sea change of voter demographic, number one, a huge amount of diversity here in Frederick County because we are, like you said, an hour outside of D.C. We have a growing industry, the biomedical industry, some manufacturing here. It's a bedroom community. A lot of people travel out of Frederick, government jobs in D.C., in and around the Baltimore area. So, yeah, it's a very diverse community, a lot of change. And I've really seen things shift, again, my entire life. 65 years has been spent here, and so it's completely different from what it was. But it's still a very good place to live, and it is that way because of the people that live here.
Right. So I wanted to set that up. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about this traffic stop that has created a little social media in it. And I hate social media, and I'd be willing to guess you don't like social media.
I don't like it either, brother.
So... But I saw today, I actually went out and looked. This is going crazy in social media. So yeah. Set the whole scenario and any last-minute updates, and then sure. We can talk about that.
Well, it's pretty much at this point with me, it's a dead issue. This happened back on June the 20th in the evening, northern part of Frederick County. One of my deputy sheriffs was traveling northbound on Route 15 North, which is a major artery, interstate artery out of Frederick into Pennsylvania, just about dark. Following a car up the road. Now, understand that this passenger vehicle was bearing a trailer tag.
That's
in and of itself, that's a problem. That's a concern. It raises a red flag, right?
Could be a stolen vehicle.
Could be. You never know. So the deputy, of course, seeing this, followed the car up 15 a little bit. And as the car, he hit his lights. And as the car was pulling off Route 15 onto a secondary road, Catoctin Furnace Road, which is a pretty isolated, unlit area. So this councilman, county councilman, Mr.
Well, wait a minute, if I could just interrupt real quick.
Yes.
I just want to inject this, if I might. I would tell you, and you, I think you worked the street longer than I did. If you're on a major artery, an interstate, and you go to pull someone over and they pull to a side road that's dark, that's reason for, I mean, that kind of gets your, I don't want to, you know, gets you concerned during that traffic stop. So he's ending up on a narrow two-lane road.
Correct.
He's not on a major interstate anymore. He's on a two-lane county road.
Yeah. I don't think that really concerned the deputy because I think maybe even the motorist, and I don't know, I wasn't there, but maybe thought it would be safer pulling off of Route 15, which is a high-speed highway.
And okay? I understand that because I don't like
right,
that.
Right. So deputy pulls him over. The stop's made at the intersection of Catoctin Furnace and Black Mills, like I said, unlit area. And the councilman apparently had seen this, and he didn't see the violation. He says in his apology letter, if you will, that he didn't see a reason for the stop. Well, first of all, it's none of his concern what the reason for the stop is. So the councilman goes on up the road, turns around, and comes back down the secondary road to where the stop's made. And he says, and this actually, I brought this out in a radio interview, WFMD here in Frederick County, Maryland, simply because of this. I was very concerned about this for the safety of my deputy, the other motorists involved, and potentially the councilman. This could have gone bad in so many ways. It's yep. dangerous, inherently dangerous. It's uncalled for. It's illegal. It's inappropriate. Whatever you can think of, the reasons why it shouldn't have happened. But more importantly, it's dangerous. So I sent the county council leadership and the county executive an email on June 25th. After I was actually at the National Sheriff's Conference in Phoenix when this happened. So this was brought to my attention, and there was an email sent up the chain of command by the deputy basically describing what had happened. So rather than go at him one-on-one and make this a larger issue, which has turned out to be larger, right. I sent an email to the council and the county executive. This is what happened. This is how it happened. This is what Councilman Hagen did. He actually, and I'll talk about it, but he identified himself as a councilman during his stop. And I wanted them to deal with it. Let them bring it up to him. Let them address it as a council member, publicly admonish him, whatever they need to do, tell him it was inappropriate. And this could have been long over with. So now,
one part that you kind of skipped, and I want to make sure everybody understands it, is so the councilman goes by and he states that, look, I don't think he was speeding or anything. But again, he doesn't understand what's going on. So he's the one being biased in his thought process, assuming that the cop's doing something wrong. Correct. So he goes down and he turns around coming back the other way.
He goes on up 15 North until there's another opportunity to get off 15 onto Catoctin Furnace further north, and then comes back down south.
And my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that when he stops, he's blocking the roadway.
He stops in the traveled lane of the road behind the deputy who's interacting with the driver. And as the window rolls down, and these are the deputy's words, that when he heard the car pull behind him in the other lane and heard the window go down, his immediate reaction was ambush. His first thought,
right.
Why wouldn't it be, Mark? Because this happens every single day across America.
And it does. And this happens a lot more often than other things happen. There's a lot of cops that are being ambushed right now. And right. I think a lot of this has to do with the narrative. But keep going.
So he's interacting with the driver. The car pulls up with Councilman Hagen. The window rolls down. The deputy says, my first immediate thought was ambush. He said, I put my hand on my gun. I turned around, and I realized immediately who it was. He said, I recognized it was Councilman Hagen. Okay, so that kind of de-escalated things in his mind a little bit. I guess he figured, you know, it's a councilman. It wasn't that threat that it could have been, which is good. So he told the councilman, you can't stop there. You're in the travel portion of the road. You're blocking traffic.
Breaking the law.
Yeah, breaking the law. So
plus, he's giving him a lawful order. Now, in the state of Colorado, yes. you are obligated by state law to follow a lawful order from law enforcement, and blocking the roadway, which is dangerous. And if a semi came around that wasn't familiar with the roadway,
right,
it could have hit all the cars. It could have killed all three of them.
That's a traffic violation. But there again, the law, failing to obey the lawful order is a common law misdemeanor, as is hindering the duties of a law enforcement officer. That's another common law misdemeanor in Maryland.
We have obstruction here. Right. Same thing.
Right.
And he admits, if I read some of the stuff that I looked at today, he admits that he was told more than once.
Yeah, according to the deputy, about four times.
Yeah, and according to him, twice.
To Mr. Hagen, once. So, listen, I have to believe my deputy. I have to believe my deputy. I just refuse to believe Mr. Hagen on this. So after he's told a couple times, and eventually Hagen says, I'm not going to leave until I know that driver is safe and okay. Well, First of all, Hagan admits, now nowhere in my initial email to the executive and the council did I ever say, did I ever provide the race of the driver. It simply wasn't important. Okay. So he says, I knew he couldn't resist saying this on the radio when he called in. Was I was on the radio. He called in to dispute this. He said, and I knew he couldn't resist saying this, I stopped because the driver was black.
So he made a decision based on race.
He took an action, made a decision based on race. Now, how wrong is that?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the whole point that I think America's been all about, is the fact we don't judge people based on their race, you know, because we're better than that. Right. And we've been working, you know, getting better and better over the years. And I just get the feeling that this narrative is actually trying to make things worse on purpose for political reasons.
Sure.
But the bottom line is, he endangered the deputy, he endangered himself, and he endangered this individual that he said he was trying to protect.
Put yourself in the deputy's place. So I've got a driver pulled over with a suspicious circumstance of a trailer on a car tag. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to interact and deal with this and make sure there's no threat here. I've got now a councilman interfering with me in the course of my duties and trying to get this figured out. So I'm giving the councilman orders to get off the road, move out of the road, move on, and he refuses to do it. I got to tell you, I'm not sure I would have handled it the same way. I got to give the deputy a lot of credit for diffusing, de-escalating, taking a lot of crap that he didn't need to take. And at the end of the day, probably resolved it as well as he could have. Would you agree?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I always refer to it as getting out of your mojo, is whenever you go through a traffic stop. And this is the thing that I think you were kind of getting to. Most people are not used to getting pulled over. Most people in the United States are, I don't want to say good drivers, because I've seen a lot of bad ones, but they're not used to getting pulled over. And so they don't know how everything plays. And in law enforcement, we get so much training on how to do the perfect traffic stop to make sure everything's right. A lot of people don't understand that we're trained to touch the trunk. And there's multiple reasons for that. One is which is if we get shot and they take off, we put our fingerprints on their car, which is a pretty morbid reason. We're also talked about getting as close to the vehicle as possible because it's hard to turn a gun all the way back. We're taught not to get up into the window of the vehicle, all kinds of things to do a great traffic stop. And a lot of that is not only just for the safety of the deputy or the officer, but it's also for the safety of the vehicle and the driver.
Correct.
A lot of people don't understand. I don't know if they teach it in Maryland to blade your car a little bit and turn your tires a certain way.
Yes.
So if somebody rear ends your car, you're actually going to protect them.
Correct. Correct.
You know, so there's all these things that we do for the safety, not only of ourselves in law enforcement, but of the citizens.
Yeah. So to even make it worse, in my view, so now Councilman Hagan declares himself. Do you know who I am? I'm County Councilman Kai Hagan.
Right.
And the deputy said, yes, I know who you are, but you're not going to stay here. You have to move. So eventually it just goes back and forth. Like I said, deputy's account says four times. Councilman says one time. So at the end of the day, the councilman says, I'm not leaving until I know that that driver is okay, that he's safe, he's okay. So the deputy says to the driver, would you mind just stepping out of the car and telling him that you're fine, you're okay? So the driver, again, who's a black man, and actually, let me just throw this out. He's an active military, he's an active soldier in the military. And as it turns out, he had just bought this car and was trying to get the car home and used a trailer tag to put on to get it home. And he ended up getting two warnings.
In Colorado, you can actually just drive the car home with no plates on it. And you just explain, you have the bill of sale and the title.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I'm just trying to get it home.
So but, how much better could the deputy have treated the driver? Hey, Sergeant, here's a warning. Yeah. Just do me a favor, get this off the road.
Right. So somebody's asking, did your deputy happen to have a body cam on?
We do not have body cams, no.
Cams are expensive.
They are. And I will tell you, Maryland just passed a law this past session that will mandate body cams by 2025.
Well, so eventually we'll have them. Who's going to pay for that mandate?
The $64,000 question, right?
Because I was actually on a school board for 12 years out here in Colorado. And you know, I always refer to this as the unfunded mandates.
Right.
You know, okay, you tell me that by a certain year, every deputy in the state of Maryland has to be wearing a body cam. Well, where's the money going to come from?
Exactly. That's the big unanswered question. Yeah.
And I'm sure as a sheriff, that drives you crazy.
It really does. Plus, I will tell you, several years ago, about 4 years ago, we did a pilot program in the use of body cams through our in-service training, scenario-based training. And what we found out, and I think you would agree after seeing everything that's occurred nationally with body camera footage, very limited benefits, very limited for the cost. Right. Going back to the traffic stop. So eventually the driver gets out of the car, says, "Hey, I'm fine. I'm okay." And when Hagen eventually leaves, the driver says to the deputy, "Said, man, that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen."
Right, exactly.
You know,
well, I got was probably concerned about his safety.
Correct.
You know, going through that situation. And actually, you know, if somebody says, and again, I don't know, the laws are different in every state. And a lot of people don't even understand that the laws are different everywhere. But if he says, "Hey, I'm a councilman." Now in Colorado, we'd start talking about, are you trying to influence a public official? Because as soon as you say, "Hey, I'm somebody important," you know, why are you telling somebody that? Why couldn't he just say, you know, "I'm just so-and-so," and
yeah,
I just,
yeah, you know,
but he had to say I was a councilman.
Yeah, to me, it's really abuse of the authority of your office, right, or the position of your office, trying to influence. You know, again, the one thing that the public may not understand in Frederick County, again, it goes back to the political situation here right now. We've got a county that's changing from a majority Republican county to a majority Democrat county. We've got a majority Democrat council. And Councilman Hagen is probably the most extreme of the progressive liberals. I mean, he actually proposed a law to outlaw the use and release of helium-filled balloons here last year. So this is the mentality.
I didn't understand that helium balloons are dangerous, or he didn't want the balloons to float away because that's littering.
No, it all goes back to his environmental views on things. So he just feels like, you know, the release of these helium-filled Mylar balloons, eventually what goes up comes down and they harm the environment, and then some turtle might eat one or something. I don't know. But those are the things that we have to deal with now, these progressive far left views of people that just simply don't fit our lifestyle here.
So now I didn't do a whole bunch of research.
Yeah.
Now you have a district attorney. I'm assuming just like we have a district attorney here.
State's attorney. Yes.
We have these areas. It's usually not just every county has one, but they call them, I can't even remember the right term. So is your district attorney pretty liberal or conservative?
No, he's a conservative. He's probably the office of sheriff, the state's attorney, the court offices, county clerk, register wills are probably the only Republican bastions of conservatives left in county government.
Yeah. So, I was just wondering if you had a liberal district attorney, if they're trying to do $0 bonds or no cash bonds.
Well, I mean, that's coming. That's coming statewide in Maryland. I mean, the whole bail system is really a shipwreck right now. So that is coming from a state level, but not so much locally.
Wow. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of bothers me as a former law enforcement, is this whole concept of no ramification to your actions, because they're not thinking long term. You know, when people are making poor decisions, and if you go to the jail or whatever and you book them in, and then they walk right back out the door, they're kind of like, well, okay, that was easy enough. And then all of a sudden they're doing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And then all these charges pile on. And then you have a DA, you know, who says, well, let's cut all that down to a misdemeanor littering or something. And then that reinforcement, probably one of the things that drove me most crazy about last year, and it just happened here recently, is, you know, we had all these riots. And I always say, you know, law enforcement is out there during protests to protect the protesters. Then when it transitions to a riot, then they're out to keep the peace and property and all that stuff. But you had all these riots, not protests, riots, where millions of dollars of damage, people were killed, all kinds of stuff. And then you have DAs that are saying, well, we're just going to drop all the charges. Yes. But you have one law enforcement officer who happens to maybe not do a perfect scenario. I mean, think about being in riot control, using your nightstick. You have all this training, and you slip up, and maybe you don't do things perfectly. So that same district attorney that just let all the rioters that were throwing Molotov cocktails and frozen water bottles at cops, you have the same DA saying, well, we're going to hold this law enforcement officer accountable for a misdemeanor assault because he didn't do something perfect in the, I want to say the heat of the battle, but they wouldn't like that term, but that's what it is.
Right.
They're trying to keep the peace and these people aren't leaving. In theory, all that should happen when something transitions from a protest to a riot is law enforcement should have to get on a blowhorn and say, leave. This is no longer a protest.
Right, exactly.
They should all leave, but they're not going to.
Yeah.
And so, and then they say, okay, clear the roadway. And in this one case, they're clearing the roadway so a fire truck could come in and deal with a fire. And she slips or whatever. He's being held accountable, but all the rioters,
they're free.
They go free.
Yeah.
You know, so the irony of this is they're reinforcing to individuals that are not going to make good decisions that they can continue making bad decisions
without consequences.
Without consequences. But what are they telling law enforcement? You do anything not perfect, which is really, we have a thing called qualified immunity.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Maryland probably has something the same, whether they call it the same or not.
Pretty much.
But if an officer's heart is in the right place, and this is what they used to always teach us, you know, if you're trying to save life, you're trying to do the right thing and you miss, maybe you're shooting at a bad guy and you miss and something bad happens, you're covered under that immunity that, and now what they're trying to say is we're going to get rid of that immunity. So you have to be perfect
right
in every situation, but the rioters can do whatever they want. But we're going to put you in jail or prison or whatever, you know. And so have you had a problem with deputies quitting and just saying, you know,
you know, it's funny you bring that up. We're right now we're hitting a cycle where we have a lot of people eligible to retire. But I have had a couple of deputies who have basically young guys in their early 40s, had their 20 years in and have walked into my office and said, Sheriff, I'm not going to be someone's lottery ticket.
Right. You know, exactly.
I've had my career. It's been a good one. I've earned my retirement. I'm leaving to do something else. And that's a real shame because you've got probably in a guy that age, you've got another 15 years of work life in law enforcement and you can't replace that experience.
Right. And that's exactly right. And that's what I was getting ready to say is, you know, we're always going to be able to get enough law enforcement when some retire, but you lose that experience. Those right. great deputies or great officers that do it right. And we know who these people are. These are the ones that you want to be your FTOs and you want them training your new people.
Sure.
So the next generation are the same great cops. It takes a lot of skill to be a good cop and you're going to lose that. And I believe the number was about 20 to 25% nationwide of law enforcement are either quitting or retiring because they can. And so many, and definitely in a sheriff's office, you probably have, we always refer to it as being golden. But they can retire at any time, but they love what they're doing.
They do.
And now it's just like he said, I'm not going to be somebody's lottery ticket that if I don't do something absolutely perfect, one, they're going to sue the county and try to get a big settlement. And who knows what could happen to them and their family, you know, so it's just so unfortunate.
Yeah, you brought up a great point. You know, I really truly believe that to do this job and do it well, you have to like people. You have to have an inherent like for people want to do good. I really do believe right. this. And that's why I will never believe for a minute that there are cops who get up in the morning with the intent on hurting someone.
Right.
Like I said, I think over the course of a career, you can be jaded. You can develop a bias or prejudice for whatever reason, maybe for the type of policing you've been exposed to or what you've had to take over your career. But I don't believe that anybody does that intentionally.
Right. I don't think there's any evidence to that fact.
No.
I mean,
no.
And I even saw in your local newspaper, there's a letter to the editor. It was either today or yesterday where someone said they were making a bad statement about you.
Hey, there's plenty of Jenkins haters out here.
But he said, you know, how dare you make this statement about there being no systemic racism? He doesn't understand how many cops are pulling over Black people and beating them to death. And I'm like, where's the evidence of that?
Yeah.
Where is there any evidence that any cop nationwide is getting in his cruiser and they're going on the hunt to pull someone over and beat them to death. That is absolutely fake news. It's that false narrative, and they're trying to reinforce. And if you say it enough times, you'll start getting people to believe it. Now, none of these people have seen it. If you ask them, give me an example of when you've ever seen this, and very few can ever do that.
You know, Mark, I really hope that people who watch your program, listen to your program, your podcast, really listen to what I'm saying, because I'm asking right now for every chief and every sheriff across this country to stand with me, to push back, to fight back against this narrative, because in their hearts, I think they really believe it. But because of politics, because of intimidation, because police chiefs serve mayors and county executives.
Right.
They're afraid to stand up. I need every chief and every sheriff in this country, in this land, to stand beside me and say, no, this does not exist. Things happen. Certain incidents have bad outcomes, but systemic policing, or I'm sorry, systemic racism does not, has never, and will not prevail in policing.
Right. And I think you really hit the nail on the head when you're talking about local chiefs and stuff, because they do work for some of these progressive mayors or city councils. They know in their heart there is no systemic racism in law enforcement. It hasn't been for years. Probably a long time, but they can't say it. You got the cancel culture.
Right.
If you say anything that's not perfect, they're going to come for you, and they're going to do whatever it takes. And even this Hagen guy, this councilman, I actually looked through a Facebook, and I'm not real big into social media, but I went and looked. He's actually interacting with people on Facebook, saying things, and it's not really trolling these people, but he's cyber stalking people. So when people say things he doesn't like, and this is Councilman Hagen that I saw this,
okay,
he's going and looking at their Facebook page, and then he's coming back and saying stuff about them based on their Facebook pages. It's almost like cyber stalking from the standpoint of.
So let me spin in another direction here. So we talked about this so-called systemic racism, and we talked about the people in this county that let me say this. I take the label, and I get the label of racist all the time. And do you know why that is? Have any idea?
Well, I want to guess by the way you look. Or
I've been accused of having a racist haircut. It just so happens I like the Roger Maris look from 1963.
Well, you're going to have to, and I've kind of got the short haircut as well.
And, so this and is why.
And they're making it based on bias because of how you look.
Correct.
And that's what we as Americans have been trying to get away from for years. And I personally believe, I try to kind of stay out of the politics, but this is driving me crazy because this is law enforcement, something that I love doing for I started law enforcement when I was full-time, when I was like 40. So I kind of got it late in my career. I was an engineer before that, but always wanted to be a cop. It's just driving me crazy because I know of all the people, and they say brotherhood, which you can't really say, but I'll say family, which is a standpoint of, every one of those officers out there to me are family. I don't care about their race. I don't care about anything. I don't care about their political views. But when you go out on the street, you don't even think about politics. This is about saving lives.
Yes.
Keeping our community safe.
Yes.
And they're the ones, and they, whoever they are, they're the ones that are trying to put this false narrative out there to destroy law enforcement and to destroy our country.
Yeah. So let me say this. I don't think it's necessarily because of the way I look. It may be part of it, but it's because I chose 14 years ago to partner with ICE, Department of Homeland Security, to rid my county of illegal immigrants that were in my county committing crimes. We work with ICE in our partnership, the 287G program, and we remove the criminal element from our community. I do not apologize for that.
And you weren't alone, because our county sheriff here in El Paso County, about the same time you're talking about, I think that's when ICE allowed for local deputies to get that specialized training in the jail.
Yes.
So you could you get access to their system, and then you could process them basically in the jail. And they're going crazy over that. And the people that you're removing are from our community are the illegal immigrants that are committing crimes.
Correct.
Mainly felonies. How can that be a bad thing?
Why should I apologize for over 12 years now, since the program's been in existence, We have placed detainers on about 1,750 criminals, people that were in this country illegally, came to Frederick County, committed crimes to include everything from murder to aggravated assault, child rape, sexual assault on women, drug trafficking, human trafficking. Why should I apologize for that? That's a tool that I can use to keep my county a little bit safer. And at the end of the day, that criminal element is gone, which has included about 115 criminal gang members, mostly MS-13, that are no longer here committing crimes. Why should I apologize for that? So it's for that reason that these Jenkins haters exist, and I'm a racist and I'm a bigot in this. I'm simply using a tool that's allowed in the law to keep my county a little bit safer so that you can sleep at night with your windows open.
Right. So you're basically enforcing the law.
How about that?
Yeah, that I don't think you have anything to apologize for. I think you're keeping your community safe. And I'm very fearful and about the direction that we as a country
are getting
into. And I really believe the backbone of law enforcement in this nation is the county sheriffs. I mean, that's really the whole foundation of law enforcement from the beginning. And I'm concerned that a lot of political individuals don't like county sheriffs because of they're elected by the people.
So they can't control us, Mark. They can't control us.
And they don't like that.
No, the county council would give anything in the world for me to lose the next election, okay? They'd give anything in the world for me to go, something happened to me. I know that is their rub with me. Nothing else. We have a great agency. I've got great men and women working here. We do a good job every single day. We've seen reductions in Part 1 crime, serious crime, 7 consecutive years. How good is that? But yet the rub on me, the rub by the council and the county executive, they don't like the sheriff because the sheriff enforces the law. He works with ICE. He enforces the law in the 287G program. That's what they don't like, and that's what they can't control. And they don't like the fact that I have the authority to do it.
Right, exactly. And I saw, just to let you know, when I was doing that little research in social media, there's a lot of people that love you to death in your community. And I think they know it's because you're keeping them safe. And they see that, you know, how close you are to D.C.
Yeah.
And all the craziness that's going on in D.C. And all these other cities. And they love the fact, I'm sure, that they can live in a safe community in your county.
Our neighbor in Montgomery County, Maryland, is a sanctuary county. Prince George's is a sanctuary county. We're bordered by Loudoun County, which the criminal gangs, you know, are pretty pervasive down there. So we have effectively built a virtual fence around Frederick County. We have gang issues. We don't have the violent random gang crime they have in Montgomery County. We don't have MS-13 constantly plaguing our schools with violent crimes. But the minute this program goes away, I'm guaranteeing you.
Is someone trying to take the program away to tell you? Are they trying to sue or anything to get you to stop doing that?
Oh, I've been sued by the ACLU, Casa de Maryland, a lot of these civil liberty organizations. Individuals have sued me for different things. They've tried every which way they can. The county council even went to the attorney general of the state of Maryland to offer an opinion as to whether or not I have the executive authority to enter into these agreements, which I do. So they've tried every avenue to get the program out of here. But at the end of the day, I have the authority as sheriff, as any other sheriff would, to enter into this agreement and enforce the law. So listen, this is going to be another election year issue. It comes and goes every year. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like you're trying to do everything that you can to keep your county safe. Have you seen a lot of the cancel culture? We've just got a few more minutes here.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like they're actually coming after you, which, I mean, they're doing it everywhere.
They are.
Has there been anything in particular that here lately that I know they're saying a lot of things that are just wrong, that they shouldn't be talking about.
Well, that's a lesson. You know what? I learned a long time ago. I just let it go. Let it go over my shoulders. Let it run off. It doesn't hurt. They can't eat you. Can't take your birthday away from you. But, you know, I've received some threats, some pretty significant threats. Things lately have quieted down here locally with the counterculture, and I refuse to buy into it. I'm not woke. I don't drink Coke. I don't buy into this, you know, eliminating history. I push back against the critical race theory. I think that's wrong the way they're educating our children. I'm lucky my kids are out of school, but listen, I don't buy into any of that. My role is simply this. At the end of the day, my job is to take and keep the bad people off the streets of Frederick County and keep Frederick County safer.
And it's as simple as that.
It's that simple. That's the very core of what we do.
Outstanding. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you talking to me. Is there any last minute things? I've kind of gone through all of this. I appreciate you taking time with us.
I would just reiterate a couple things. Number one, just please understand that what Councilman Hanga did was so dangerous. I mean, listen, everything else being said about it, he can't imagine. He doesn't begin to understand how dangerous that could have been. And I hope he gets that at the end of the day. The second thing I want to again say over is that I really hope that every chief and every sheriff in this country will stand beside me and fight back against this narrative of systemic racism. That's so important, because if it continues, you know, this country's going down a bad road. We're not in a good position right now. It really concerns me, and this is only going to make it worse.
Right, and every reporter, which we know, I don't even want to go down this whole path. We don't have time to talk about reporters. Right. They need to be asking in every major city and county, well, every city and county, I would want to know, every law enforcement officer that represents me, you know, a chief, a sheriff, whatever, what is your view on systemic racism in your force? Are you telling me, you know, is there systemic racism in your department? And I think most chief of police's, even in major cities, would have to admit, no, there's not.
See, they need to say it publicly, no.
Exactly. And that's definitely what they need to know. And the public has a right to know. I mean, if I lived in Portland right now, I'd be packing my bags and moving. But everybody in Portland, Seattle, even these, you know, Minneapolis, these cities that are, you know, defunding the police, they need to come out. The chiefs need to say one way or another. You know, they need to say, what do you think? Because a lot of political leaders that have been called on this have ultimately had to say, no, I don't believe there's systemic racism. And there's definitely no evidence to that fact.
Right.
And that would be my thing as a previous investigator, and you were a detective for longer than I was. I don't boil down to the politics. Just tell me, what are the facts? And there's no facts to support systemic racism. And then you've got now the CRT where they're trying to teach our young kids. You know, my wife is from China. She's Chinese. I've told my kids from day one, you can achieve anything that you want. And no one's going to stop you. And my kids have not had any issues with anything, especially with racism and stuff. And both of my kids have been very successful because that's how I brought them up. I'm not going to tell somebody from birth that they have no chance.
And you know what? I'll close out by saying this. As we're sitting here today, seeing what's going on across this country, the open borders, the crime spiking in the major cities, metropolitan areas, just remember, we have to turn things around, because if this country goes down, there is no place to run. This is it.
Right.
This is it.
Well, hey, again, thanks for your time. I appreciate you doing the podcast with me.
Thank you. And, do it again anytime.
You bet. I'll send you an email. And next time I head back east, I want to definitely come through your county.
Please do. Please do. Thank you.
All right. So to everyone else, I've got about a minute left on the podcast. TJ, you can let the sheriff go. I don't think that John needs to come in for the last minute and stuff, but I just to kind of close this up just for the last, I believe I have 1 minute left. I hope everybody appreciates the opportunity to talk with the sheriff to hear the sheriff speak. I'm sure there's sheriffs a lot like him throughout the nation that are frustrated about this whole narrative. And I agree with them 100%. I really wish that every chief or sheriff would come out and stand together and end this whole bogus narrative that there's systemic racism. It's going to get people hurt and it's going to get deputies and officers killed. And we need to move forward. We worked so hard in this nation to get past looking at people's race and making decisions. And I think we were heading in a good direction until all these false narratives. So on Wednesday, you'll see Chuck and Julie. Everybody have a great Monday. And hopefully you'll see me later on. Have a great day.